Hello everyone, and welcome to our webinar panel, The Evolution of Leadership, Changing the Board Focus from Operations to Governance. Without further delay, I would like to introduce our presenter, Aaron Roberts. Aaron Roberts is a partner at Zeem, a management consultant and expert in business process reengineering. Aaron enjoys working alongside not-for-profit executives as they lead their organizations to new levels of success. With a knack for reducing complexity and streamlining operations, Aaron is an expert in the business of not-for-profits. Prior to co-founding Zeem, Aaron was a director in the securities industry, working with senior executives at large corporate and government clients. She believes that numbers tell the story. Without further delay, let's begin. Aaron?
Thank you very much, Anne. Well, welcome to our interview with the past, present, and future presidents of the Sign Association of Canada. In this panel interview, we're going to walk you through the evolution of the board of the Sign Association of Canada. We're going to call it SAC for short. And in the past 5 years, we've had three presidents that have contributed to the evolution of SAC's governance structure, and our next president takes over in June. The organization started from a heavily operations-oriented focus, and it's evolved dramatically. So today we're going to be talking to the past, current, and future presidents about how the board got out of operations and onto strategy. We're going to be talking about where the board is today and where it's going to be going in the future. So our panelists have joined me in the Zeem webinar studio, and I'm going to start by telling you a little bit about them. Perry Brooks is a past president of the Sign Association, and the evolution, or perhaps revolution, we're discussing today started under his leadership alongside SAC's then vice president, which was Andy Grugru. Perry started his tenure in the sign industry in 1998, and today his company, which is Advantage Signs, staffs over 30 people and produces every aspect of commercial and industrial signage. Perry served as the president of the Alberta Sign Association and also served as president of the Sign Association of Canada for 2 years. His interests are primarily in education, especially promoting education within the sign industry. And one of his major accomplishments was when he was with the Alberta Sign Association, bringing the electrical certification course online. And that is one of the key elements of the member value proposition of the Alberta Sign Association. Andy Grugru succeeded Perry as president, and the evolution continued. Andy's been with 3M for the past 29 years, and he's currently the Canadian sales leader for the Graphic Markets Division. Andy's been a board member of the Sign Association of Canada for the last 8 years, and he's had various board positions during his tenure. Currently, he is the immediate past president of the Sign Association. Andy's other involvements include tennis, school council, old-timers hockey, coaching hockey, and soccer. He is also a proud volunteer of the Burlington Lions Optimus Minor Hockey Association as the director of Rep Hockey. Our current president, Francois Lussier, brings over 25 years of sales and management experience within the sign industry. He's currently serving his third term as president and his sixth year on the board of directors. Prior to that, he served for over 7 years on the board of the Quebec Sign Association. Francois is the National Business Development Manager for Montreal Neon and is responsible for expanding business within North America. Our next president is Justin Boudreau. He will be taking over in June. He's the Director of Finance and Administration at Matatal Signs, and in his role as the Vice President, Justin is active in all matters relating to the sign industry across Canada. He's also on the board of the Atlantic Provinces chapter of the Sign Association of Canada and currently serves as the past president of that organization. Justin holds a Bachelor of Business Administration from Acadia, an MBA from Dalhousie, and he's a commissioner of the Supreme Court of Nova Scotia. So, those of you who follow our educational content, you know that Zeem hosts a webinar or a workshop every month. Zeem does consulting and association management for membership organizations of all sizes, and as you know, the webinars and the workshops focus on topics of interest for leaders at membership organizations. We host these events for two reasons. The first is to give you some relevant and valuable information that you can take back to your association and use right away And the second reason is to introduce you to Zeem and to give us an opportunity to share the insights that fascinate us. When you're looking for the kind of help we provide, we hope that you'll think of us. I want to introduce you to our agenda. We're going to spend about 30 minutes on the interview itself, and then we're going to open it up to live Q&A. So I'm going to start by giving you a little bit of context about what we're talking about today. What you can see in front of you is the sustainability model. And the sustainability model is built specifically for membership organizations, and it has five pillars. Second up from the bottom, you can see something called regional networks. It's a critical part of the sustainability model that organizations have boots on the ground, and they have people that can actually reach out and touch the members. That grassroots connection is highly important. We've also got four other pillars, which are essentially member services and elements of the member value proposition. Those are professional development and certification, which is exactly what it sounds like. It's ongoing learning for members. There are events, and events often have an element of professional development in there, so there's some crossover there. There are knowledge products, and these are real meaty information pieces that people actually need to do their jobs. They might be best practices, they might be compensation surveys, they might be research papers, they might be state of the industry papers, that sort of thing. Then we have stakeholder relations and issues management, which some people call government relations, some people call advocacy, another important element of the sustainability model. Now, anyone who's got all five of those pillars is likely to be highly sustainable on an ongoing basis. Now, however, if you don't have all five pillars, it doesn't mean you're not sustainable. It just means you need to make sure that the pillars you've got are very, very powerful. I want you to see to the membership organization model, because what we're going to be talking about today is one element of the backstage of this model. This model has eight elements. The first five are the backstage, and that's human resource management, planning, governance, resource management, and revenue diversification. These are the things that you don't see. If they're working well, they're purely in the background. The elements of the front stage are your value proposition to your members and your sponsors. These are different but related. And also your stakeholder relations and issues management. Governance is a really interesting element of the backstage, because if you've got fantastic governance or you've got awful governance, for the most part, your members don't see it. However, if you've got fantastic governance, it really contributes to the sustainability and the success of the organization. And if you've got bad governance, it does an outstanding job of really bringing the organization down. That's really a very short overview of the high performance organization model. If you want to find out more, just go to this URL on our website. So let's move on to our panel. I want to start with you, Perry. When you took over as the president of SAC, you walked into what could be only described as a very challenging environment, and at the very least, the board certainly wasn't united in their vision of the future of the organization. Can you tell us, Perry, what you saw as your top priorities and what moves the board made under your leadership to move forward?
I sure can, Erin. So when I started, the Science Association of Canada had been around for a number of years, but it had the big push came from the East. And because the office was out in the East, it had a very Eastern-centric association. And so it was not valued out in the West, and nor was the West valued from their perspective. So the other thing was most of the energy that was being spent in the board time was spent on what was the Sign Expo of Canada, which used to be called the Contact Show. And that was a major fundraising event. And we seemed to be more of a trade show organization than a sign association. So my goal at the time was to create a truly national feel to the Sign Association, and focus more energy on member value as opposed to the yearly trade show. So some of the moves that the board did at the time was one dramatic move was they elected me as president. I was a president from the West, which was very unusual, and I think that showed a good spirit from the board at the time that they were looking at a change. After that, we were my goal then was, or one of the things we did, we started reaching out to the West and actually to all the boards throughout Canada, and giving everyone kind of equal floor time to discuss their concerns and slowly develop a spirit that that became truly Canadian or all across the nation. We did some other changes, more material changes. We changed the office environment. We eventually hired an association management company, which was yourself. But we also hired a government relation position. We filled a position to start providing more membership value.
You know, Perry, I seem to recall that back when you came on board as president, the board was involved in absolutely every element of operations, right down to, you know, is it okay to buy a whiteboard for the office? How did you feel that was working for or against the member value?
Well, it was working against it, and unfortunately that came about because the head office was shared by the local Ontario board, and actually they just got more involved with it, and there was lots of really hands-on things like hands-on decisions. And so you're right, a lot of these minor decisions were all being done at a board level, and it was really controlled through that really more from an Eastern perspective.
And I guess that was, my perspective would be, I guess that made Western and probably Eastern Canada feel like, well, you know, we've got an organization that's doing this trade show, putting money in the bank, and they're not doing anything to make this a national organization. It's just all about Ontario.
It really was, and not to their discredit, because we only know what we know, and they were living in an environment, they were getting very good service from the Science Association, and from the Western perspective, we had very little to do with the Science Association. So it was just kind of, often people in the West didn't even realize that we belonged to a national organization. It was really more of a British Columbia organization or an Alberta association.
Perry, I'm wondering from a personal perspective, you know, I know that I mean, I grew up in BC, and BC always had this attitude, well, you know, Ontario, Ottawa, they think they're the center of the universe and they've got nothing to do with us. They don't even know who we are. And that's definitely a geographical perspective that I know Alberta shares to some extent. How did you feel about, you know, being an Alberta guy at the center of the universe? And how did your Alberta members, your former Alberta colleagues, feel about you sitting in that seat? Did they think that was a good thing, or did they figure you'd gone over to the dark side?
Well, it was a big learning moment for me. So, as often what we do when we go into another environment, we make the assumption that everyone thinks the same way that we do and has the same values. But of course, in every geographic area, whether it's in Canada or throughout the world, everybody has their own spirit of how things are done. I'm from Alberta, and Alberta is a little bit, been referred to as the Wild West. There seems to be people that they come here, they make their millions, they lose their millions, they do it all over again. Whereas out east, there's a lot of old families, there's old money, there's a lot of respect for allowing things to go on, even if they're not going on right, give them people some time to work out these issues, as opposed to out west, where if the spirit is often, if you're not doing a good job, you know, we shoot you, we hire someone else. If we made a mistake, well, we shoot the next person, we try to hire you back. That's just the kind of the spirit that it is. So the first thing that I had to discover was that people aren't wrong. They're just thinking differently than you. And then the goal was to kind of reunite that. And it wasn't like it was all one way. It wasn't like, well, the East wasn't respecting the West, but the West wasn't respecting the East as well. And so you mentioned how do they feel when I became president. There was a little bit of eye rolling. There's a little bit of, you know, good luck with that. And you know, they're only going to break your spirit, this kind of thing. But over time, I believe it won out.
You know, another challenge that you must have dealt with, Perry, is, you know, you're the West guy is now in the middle of things. The West guy is in charge. Did you ever feel real or perceived pressure that it was your job to represent Alberta's interests?
Not so much Alberta as much as I tried to represent everyone's interests. But because the West was not being, their interests was having, had very little effect in much of the history of FAC, I came across, I was perceived that I was really pushing Western values. But I was really just introducing them in an area that disregarded them at the time, or had a history of not acknowledging them.
So it wasn't so much Alberta's needs that were being represented, it was the nation's needs outside of Ontario.
That's right, absolutely. And same way with going the other direction as well. So in Alberta, I would go out to Toronto, and I would learn how things were done there. Even just in the sign business, there's just different cultures and how projects are looked after or how things are done. And I was surprised at some things. So I would come back home out in the West, and I'd say, well, this is how things are done out there, and it's not wrong, it's not right, it's just different. So that messaging went both directions.
Well, thanks, Perry. I want to move on to Andy now. And I know that, Andy, you and Perry worked very closely, and you were, right beside Perry as you were going through all of this. When it came your turn to take over as president, what did you see as your top priorities, and what do you feel were the most notable changes that took place in your term as president?
Well, the biggest shift we had was, of course, similar to what Perry was talking about in the essence of a transformation of where the entire sign association was going. And there was this mystique of centrally controlled. And I guess in the past, of all the, Perry, of course, and some of the other people, I was truly a national person. My responsibility curtails to everything in Canada. So I was not sort of voiced as the Ontario person or the Atlantic person or the Western person. I was sort of more of a neutral person. And I was trying to capture all the efforts that Perry did, because Perry was moving the ship the right way. So I had to transition away the whole thing. Number one, we were transforming ourselves from gaining experts to help us manage the business, where we are all volunteers in this industry. All the presidents are all, and the board directors are volunteers. We have businesses and or jobs to run in different capacities. So to try to enforce the change management was probably one of my toughest goals, because everybody has a mentality of, oh, it's them, it's this, it's that. And in the Sign Association, there's a lot of history. And it's very phenomenal history, and it's built this industry up. But like every business, we have to change. If we don't change, we won't be here. And I think that was the number one thing, is to try to transitionalize the hard work that Perry had done. And it was truly revolutionary. Basically having, moving forward with, there was a separation in a chapter, etc. They were on their own, for us moving to a management team to look after and make us even stronger and better.
So it sounds to me like what you were saying was a key part of what you had to accomplish when you came in was implementing the initiatives that had already been started.
Well, absolutely. I mean, I think I believe that every person comes into a role. I was fortunate enough to have the experience and the relationships with the current board, Perry and the other team members, to see a transitional evolution starting to happen. And, you could see where we were trying to go, but we had lots of resistance. There's no question. And, it took a period of time to get over that hurdle.
Let me talk to you about that, Andy, because, I'm sure, you see this in your daily job. We see it in life. When change is happening, even if it's awesomely good change, whether it's awesomely good or awesomely bad, there will always be people that feel uncomfortable with it, that resist it, and sometimes resist it viscerally and very passionately. How do you think that resistance managed to start to fade away? Was it just time, or were there certain actions that the board took that you thought helped to fix that?
Well, I think the actions were, you know, the movement of going from a staff-based team to a non-staff, whereas we've got the support of we'll say the Zeem team helping us manage that and really sharing, like, to remove all the misconceptions that people have on, you know, he said, she said, without ever asking a question. So that was one. Number two, what I tried to do is to capture on, we've always had communication. We talk about communication with people. Is I tried to instill a monthly or bi-monthly regional presidents meeting. So I would reach out to all the presidents and we would just talk about things, because the toughest thing is everybody's busy. So how do you get the information out there to everybody? And I felt that was at least a way to try to mitigate what we were doing. And thirdly, I had an opportunity, because of my role currently with the company, I was able to go out and get to really connect with the respective regional presidents all over the place on different related things than just the Sign Association of Canada. So I had to break down some of the barriers, because, you know, I was trying to have my view, as Perry felt that he was in a situation where he was from the West, but doesn't matter, he was representing Canada. He did all the right things. So I was trying to be the neutral, saying, okay, guys, I'm not from Ontario, I'm from Canada. And, you know, try to take it to the next shift like that.
That's a really good point, Andy. And I thought you made a good point about the regional presidents. I know that it's a very typical challenge for a national organization whereby if there are regions and chapters, they say, oh, you know, the national board does this, that, and the other thing. We don't know what's going on. You know, nobody tells us anything. Even though the regional presidents, you know, in this case actually sit on your board, it doesn't mean that the information trickles down to the region itself. Do you feel that by having that regional president's council or calls, do you think that helped to disseminate the information and increase the transparency?
I think every person that does a role has a different approach and a different tactic. I'm a believer in person-to-person, voice-to-voice type communication. I think it's a lot more effective than the bombardment of sometimes emails. And I personally feel, for myself, it was a way to overcome the various obstacles and options that were out there.
Now, that's a good point, Andy. It's much harder to dislike somebody when you have a personal relationship with them.
Oh, and I'm not saying people don't like what you do, because you do get stereotyped. There's no question. And no matter what, when you make hard decisions, it's like any role, there's always going to be somebody who's going to challenge you or question you. And because you're operating under change management, they're looking for your mistakes rather than all the good that you're doing.
That's a really good observation. Francois, I want to go over to you now, and I want to ask you the same question as I asked Andy, which specifically is, when you took over as president after Andy, what did you see as being your top priorities, and what do you feel are the most notable changes that have taken place under your current leadership?
Well, good morning, everyone. I was actually lucky to, you know, have my two predecessors, Perry and Andy, really put a great foundation in place, and, you know, they've touched on that, where we kind of changed our focus and our management company to really take care of the backstage of our organization. And that being put in place, and although we went through some different challenges, as they mentioned, and some resistance, you know, things have now evolved to a point where people are kind of starting to see really the base of what we did and why we did those changes. So in a nutshell, you know, I was trying to really make sure that we, again, communicate better with all the regions and making sure that it's a national association. And, you know, from coast to coast, decisions that we've made as a group is to, when we have regional events, to make sure there's someone from the board of directors, from the national board, to be specifically, depending if it's a golf tournament in Regina or something in PEI, we wanted to make sure we had presence there so that to avoid a little bit of, you know, it's a central organization, it's from Ontario, I really wanted to change that look. And I'm the actual first French-speaking president of the Science Association of Canada. So we also had some challenges, you know, for example, with Quebec, whereby, you know, they were looking at this, first of all, the language barrier was one thing. So we've done a lot of great things and now are translating to French all of the things that we do, which really increase communication for example, with Quebec, you know, to make them see that, you know, we're part of the same group. And, you know, over time, we're really achieving that right now, which is nice to see for sure.
I'm going to ask you the same question as I asked Perry, Francois. You know, both you and Perry came from similar backgrounds in that you had been, you know, members of the board of directors of the local region. Did you feel that when you came on board as president that there would be, you know, pressure from the Quebec region that you were there to represent Quebec's interests?
There was some of that for sure. They, you know, I mean, humans are humans, and they're like, oh, great, you know, we got someone from Quebec representing us at a national level, and we'll be able to do great things. And actually, there is a lot of good things that came out of that. Did I feel pressure? Not really. I mean, there were some expectations maybe for some people, but I had a bigger global vision than it was us at all. Actually, at the time, it was not for me to really come in, you know, make Quebec a preference. It's a really a national approach. And, you know, people sort of realize that. And I think it's actually really coming together right now. And really happy to see that.
You know, Francois, I've observed a number of changes from a governance perspective that have occurred over the course of the last few years. And I'm thinking there's board orientation and training now that happens. There is a strategic planning process that happens, and it's been my observation that the board is really focused on the big picture right now and taking the organization forward. It seems to me that it's now much more focused on strategy and direction. Now, keeping in mind that this is a backstage thing, you know, it's not something that the members really see, do you feel this change has helped the Sign Association, and if so, how?
Well, absolutely. And you know, we're really, really trying to become a high-performance membership organization right now. So you're talking about backstage, front stage. People don't really see what's going on in the background. It's, you know, but at the same time, the people are starting to see the benefits of what's happening on the backstage. You know, HR, planning, governance, resource management, revenue diversification are all part of the backstage. But by becoming a high-performance organization, it's really raising the bar. You know, on membership value proposition, that was something that we worked really hard on. And then, you know, we actually put a business plan together because there was no business plan. So where are we going from here, especially from on the backstage part of it, and where, you know, Zimmer Management Company, we wanted to see, okay, what we wanted to have moving forward and having a business plan so that we could follow our goals and objectives moving forward. And then, you know, right now we're talking about a sponsored value proposition, which is also something that people forget, you know. Revenue diversification, looking at it from, yes, we have a trade show, we have our members, but there's also, you know, great help from our sponsors. And what is in there for them? So we're really trying to build right now a value proposition for our sponsors to really see. And the challenge in this, and although it is for our members as well, at this point, as we are raising the bar to become a high performance organization, is to make sure that they understand and we communicate with them the value proposition that we have. Otherwise, it's kind of mute, right? We can't just be sitting around a board and understanding the value proposition on our own. We have to see how we can make sure that they clearly understand it and understand where we're going forward with this. So
it sounds like what you're saying is that, you know, in terms of moving forward, one of your key objectives is making sure that the member value proposition resonates with members and that there's good two-way communication.
Absolutely. Like, you know, it goes back to communication. Andy touched on that. And, you know, one-on-one, it's kind of difficult to go and see all the members across Canada, but that's where our region and chapters are also working towards that. And, you know, as we just finished a board meeting where, you know, where you said, you know, we've got a great value proposition, and I think it's exactly what we want it to be. Now we have to make sure that your members understand it because, you know, we're all busy, all have jobs, our businesses to run, and then we come up with a value proposition, but, you know, it's how does it resonate in their own mind? And they have to clearly see it, understand it, and I think that's our challenge right now, and that's what I think moving forward we need to make sure that we do well.
Francois, I now want to move on to Justin. And Justin, I want to ask you some questions. You are going to be taking over as president in June. You've certainly been on the board for several years, and you've got a really good grounding in how the board has changed in terms of its operations. You've had the opportunity to work with all three of the presidents on the line. Tell me, what have you learned from them?
You're right. I mean, I've had the opportunity to sit and kind of take in the meetings from a number of different perspectives. When you do have a different person running the meeting every term of presidency, the meetings take a different tone, and I think that's a great thing. That's why I really like the cycle of how our EC runs, because you you get to learn different things from different people. So, I mean, I guess when I think back to Perry's presidency, I learned a number of different things from Perry, and one of the big ones was that taking calculated risks can really pay off. Perry kind of joked about the Wild West. Well, there's a lot of cowboys out there. Perry had a number of big ideas, and basically switching to a management team structure, using a management company was a big decision. That wasn't something that just came up overnight and it was easy to do. And, going back in the history of SAC now, when I look at it, in the rear view, that was a calculated risk that certainly paid off. So when we sit through our board meetings now, I certainly look back on that and I don't necessarily, I'm a risk averse person just from my own background going to the banking world. So it was nice to kind of see something like that transpire and really succeed. When I think back to Andy's presidency, I think structure. Andy, obviously, due to his background with 3M, 3M is a very structured company. Andy ran the meetings. I don't think they were ever a minute over time or a minute under time. Andy ran a very tight ship, and he abided by all of our bylaws. He, in fact, struck up a bylaw committee when some of the stuff came into question, when questions came up surrounding our bylaws. So that was something that I really, during that period, I became much more attuned to the bylaws of our organization and who can do what requires a board vote, what can be done at the EC level, what can be delegated to the EC. And I think that was very important for not only me, but everybody sitting around the table to understand how our organization is set up from a bylaw standpoint. Francois is our current president, so I have lots of stuff fresh in my mind about Francois. But one of the big things with him is Francois comes from a sales background, and he's basically instilled in me the value that it's not all about the money. We need to spend money to create member value. And we certainly, he and I are kind of the yin and yang, I guess, when it comes to that, because I'm the no guy and he's the yes guy. But we've struck a good balance in that we have realized that it takes a certain amount of resources to make sure that your members are getting all they can out of the organization. Like he just alluded to, we need to then, find the right avenue to let them know what that value proposition is. So yeah, I mean, three different people, three different presidencies, and all of it has benefited me, and hopefully I can take that knowledge and spin it into some success in the next few years.
And also with you coming from Nova Scotia, you will presumably bring some of that flavor to your tenure as well, too.
Absolutely. We'll bring a bottle of rum and a ship in a bottle to every meeting.
Okay. Well, let's talk about when you take over later on this year, Justin. What do you see as being your top priorities for your tenure as president?
I think our priorities are fairly typical of most member-driven organizations at this point, in that we want to retain our existing membership base and attract new members. We have seen a slight decline in our membership base over the last year, and we want to see it go back to the basics. Do people get on the phone, have the personal relationships that are very important in a grassroots organization such as ours? So I guess we kind of want to make sure that we're reaching out and making contact with all of our members and all of our prospective members, because we look at the sign industry as a whole and think, there's a number of companies out there that that aren't members of our organization, and we feel like we could add value to their company. So that's something that we want to do. We want to make sure we're staying in contact with the people that the stakeholders of our industry, and as such potential members of SAC. We want to continue to grow our show. Our SEC sign show is a very important part of our, not only our revenue structure, but the cohesiveness of our industry. It's a kind of a one-time meeting place for everybody throughout the year. So We want to make sure we grow it and keep it fresh, keep the content new, make sure that it's kind of a must-do for everybody in our industry. We want to see our online presence grow. You know, we've made tremendous strides in the last few years, and I think over the next few we'd like to see it grow even further, you know, to things such as a members-only section of our site where we can really, you know, drive home that member value proposition and give people stuff that we currently have but don't have the avenue to get to them. And we want to just continue to promote our value proposition. I mean, we work hard at the board level, and we know that our staff works very hard to ensure that we're providing membership, you know, value to the people that are members of our organization, and we want to continue to do that. One last thing that I had down here to as a priority was we may want to rethink the way that we're doing committees, like I said, about taking calculated risks. I mean, committees are something that we got into and we got comfortable with them, and then all of a sudden we realized a few of them are simply just spinning their wheels and not producing what they were at one point. So yesterday at our board meeting we discussed a possible structure where we, you know, might blow up the committees. We may look at doing them in a different way of task forces. So there's a number of different priorities there, and that's, I guess, if I had to nail down a few as to where we would move in the next year, that would be them.
Justin, I just want to ask you one more question around the governance piece of things. I would imagine that the way the board meetings are run and what happens at the board level and the way it happens has probably changed since you first joined the board. Do you feel that there is that it's easier to recruit people onto the board now that you have a better governance model or a better governance structure? Do you feel that is attracting people that might not have otherwise been interested in being part of the board half a dozen years ago?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it's somewhat of an intimidating environment to come into at first, just because the meetings are run very well, and if governance is not something that you're familiar with, it's a very different environment. I feel like we've struck a very good balance of being, you know, do we operate by the absolute book of Robert's rules? Probably not all the time, but they are a very, you know, a strong guiding light for us. I think the reason that our board succeeds and we see a good succession come through is that people are able to sit through in not necessarily a leadership or speaking role for their first few board meetings, and they're able to take in, you know, how we run our meetings, you know, as I said before, what requires a vote, what is something that, you know, can be passed through motions, and it's much easier to recruit people into these types of positions when they've had some experience and are able to sit through these, and they all of a sudden don't become as intimidating. I mean, there's certainly lots of resources that you can read. That I think one of the big things, Aaron, was when we provided the board of directors package for new directors coming on. I wish that was something that was in place when I came on board, because that certainly would have alleviated a little bit of, you know, hesitancy and stress that was there just from the first meeting, where I, truth be told, didn't really understand how the meeting was structured. So I think we're at a point now where we can really see that some of the work that we've put into creating those packages and having our meeting structured in a certain fashion has really paid off.
Thank you very much, Justin, and I'm looking forward to your tenure starting in June. I would like to open this up to all four panelists, but I'd like to start with you, Andy. Andy, could you tell our listeners what would be your top tip, your top tips, your advice to anyone coming into the role as president of a membership organization in general?
Patience. Listening, I virtually came in from the outside. So what I mean by that is the company I work for is a very large company, and I was in a totally different business. So I did not have a lot of understanding for some of the issues behind the scenes, and basically to run a business, as in whether it was a sign shop or a sign manufacturer or many other types of businesses. So I'd say the number one thing is to really take a step back and to listen and understand everything you possibly can. And sometimes it's the hardest thing, because I reflect back on the moments that I had with Perry. You know, Perry and I had, you know, we had definitely understandings, but we, you know, I got to learn from what he was doing and how he was doing it, and I was trying to balance out the whole, okay, how do we move this, and, you know, the transitional things that are happening, and it's, you know, you got to take a step back, and also, you can't take it personally, because, you know, it is, you are working for an organization that is a very solid organization, and there's lots of different influences there, so you can't let this eat you out personally. That's what I would say.
That's really good advice, Andy. Perry, what would you add, top tips or advice to incoming presidents?
One of the challenges that I've discovered is that, especially with associations, is you have some people that have been with the organization for a long time, sometimes even decades, and you have people that were perhaps on the board or even the president for, you know, many years ago, and they've made decisions based on the situation they had at hand, and they were good decisions at the time. And as time has gone by, the situation has changed, and then the new board comes along and they start changing these decisions. And so there's sometimes conflict that develops because people that were there, you know, 8 or 10 years ago are saying, hey, we look at that and we decided that was a bad thing to do and we didn't do it, and now you guys are running ahead, or the other way around. And if you're not communicating carefully and if you're not being respectful of the past, you can just end up developing these rifts. So my advice is to take the time to get to know the history of the board, and particularly when there's a decision to be made that has been discussed for a long time, make sure that we're familiar with what has taken place in the past so that we can make a knowledgeable decision and be able to explain it properly.
That's a good point. Being respectful of the past doesn't mean that it's got to continue, but being respectful of it is giving credit where credit's due, I guess.
That's exactly right. It's difficult for people that were involved in an organization that really maybe stepped away and they haven't been involved for the last 5 years, and then suddenly they hear about these changes, and sometimes the first thought is, oh my goodness, they're going to unravel everything that we've done, because they're just not familiar with the new knowledge that's come about. So being respectful and acknowledging that this kind of thing can happen, and doing your best to not take it personally when people are upset. They have a heritage of that they left at their time. And down the road, as years go by, some of the things that I was passionate about, that I worked on, will slowly become undone as things change and new ways come about that are better ways to go to do things.
That's a good point, Francois. What would you have to say to an incoming president as you work through your last 6 months?
Well, I think you have to come in, and having a background is definitely very important. The way we're structured right now, our presidents upcoming have had a chance to see what happened in the background. They've sat on the board, they've played different roles, and they're kind of ready to become in a president's role. I really believe passion is one of the things that, you know, you have to be passionate about your industry, and you have to have a vision. And to me, it's all about being together. I find our industry was very segmented in the sense that people didn't want to talk to each other, competition, you know, assign company to another, didn't want to talk about, you know, what they're doing. And our biggest treasure, SEC in Toronto, for years happened, and then people kind of, the show ended and people got it everywhere. And I wanted to bring people together, so we actually started a Friday night event. And I talk about this because it's a sold-out event now. It's a great event. It's well-attended. People want to go to that place. And you got competition distributors, class ones, class twos, for the, you know, like our manufacturing and our suppliers are all sitting in the same room. Suppliers that compete against each other. Sign companies that compete against each other. We also establish the personality of the year. So all these things that we do are there to get people together. And that was my what I wanted to do. So a passion, vision, a goal, and for me, these were the things that I wanted to see resolved. I love this industry, and I wanted to see people get to, you know, be together, and that's one of the things I wanted to do. So
that's a really important point, Francois. I know that for many membership organizations, that feeling of, you know, being in this together is a huge part of the value. And when you're when you're starting with an industry that is to some extent very polarized to begin with, that is a real important role for the membership organization, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. I am a strong believer of that. And we actually have seen that, you know, over the last 5 years. And when you look back at our last event, it was really amazing. We had, an honorary chair, which is like the president of the biggest sign company in Canada, speaking at our event. He was out there mingling, talking to sign companies. It's competition. So thank you for being my competitor. And they were exchanging, and it was fantastic. I mean, I was like, I looked back and I go, great, this is the right step moving forward. And I was proud to see that happening within our members and our organization as a whole. So.
Well, thank you, Francois. We are now going to open it up to live Q&A. So I'm going to hand it over to Anne. Anne, do we have any questions from our listeners?
We do. Thank you, Erin. Just a reminder to everyone on the line today, if you do have a question for Erin or any of our panelists, you can use the questions section on your GoToWebinar dashboard, or you can also use the raise your hand feature to ask a question verbally. The first question that we have here is, I assume it's for everyone, and it is, I am on the Child Advocacy Board as well, and there is an ED on the board, but they may be leaving soon. They're a few years into the organization, so it is transitioning from a very hands-on original startup members of the board to a more governance-based board. What suggestions do you have for easing the transition with regards to the few remaining originating members? And the person also added a few comments here, i.e. they have a more direct contact with staff, which is not the proper route according to the structure between board, ED, and staff. And the attendee also mentioned that they also don't want to insult them because it's always been done that way.
Okay, Anne, would you just mind repeating the question again, and then I'll try to summarize it for our panelists.
Certainly. The question is, and I'm just paraphrasing here, the attendee is on a child advocacy board as well, and there is an ED, but they may be leaving soon. They are a few years into the organization, so it is transitioning from a very from the original members of the board to a more governance-based board. What suggestions do you have for easing the transition with regards to the few remaining originating members?
So it sounds to me like we've got a few things going on here. First of all, we've got a change in board directors. So it sounds like our listener is wondering how you can help to ease the transition between one group to another. It sounds like they've got an executive director, but the executive director may be leaving soon. So it sounds like they either need to replace the executive director or bring in a management team or something along those lines. And it also sounds like they've got a kind of a worrisome problem that despite the fact that there is an executive director, the board is getting involved kind of directly in managing the staff. So that's obviously that's quite a handful of things to be dealing with. I do know that the Sign Association of Canada at one point was actually in that position where they had an executive director. The executive director had left, and the Sign Association board was trying to manage the staff. And I do know that in the Sign Association of Canada over the last 5 years, there has been, some meaningful change in the composition of the board. So I wonder if I could start with you, Perry, and could you address, any or all of those challenges? And that's a big question.
Sure. Yeah, that is a big question. And I think it relates to the fear that that sometimes that we have, that when we bring about change, that we're going to lose something, that there's how do we be respectful, and yet we got to make this change. And I think one of the things is really open conversation about the history of where we came from. Especially, this is really important for these grassroots organizations that are going through some radical changes here, where they're really evolving into something quite a bit bigger than what they were, and there's always an element of people wanting to keep things the way they were, and a lot of that is just that they have a fear that they're going to lose something that they worked so hard to preserve. So I think having that, acknowledging that that fear, and then working with people to talk about you know, really outline how things will look in the future, and having a good discussion as to particularly when it comes to, you know, how we're handling, who's looking after what, and how that chain of command works, and making sure that everyone has had an opportunity to discuss this and weigh in on it before it's all implemented.
Thanks, Parrott. What I'm, just to summarize, what I'm hearing you say there is that we need to make sure that everybody is as clear as possible on what's going to happen, so that people understand what that change is going to look like, that they have an opportunity to talk about it to help to alleviate that fear, and even though the change is still going to happen, they've had the opportunity to say their piece, to be heard respectfully, and to be given a transparent explanation of what's coming next.
Yeah, that's exactly right. You're not going to eliminate everyone's fears, and there's sometimes an element involved where some people will just, there's some personalities that they'll just continue to oppose it, just as a way of saying, you know, if this doesn't work, then at least I can be the one that said I knew it wasn't going to work, and you just can't eliminate that. So you can't be fearful about it. At some point, you just gotta push ahead and be confident in the decision that you're making.
You know, I'd like to pass that question on to you, Andy. And Andy, I know you've got a hard stop at 1 o'clock, so I wonder if we could get some words of wisdom from you in that question before you have to drop off.
Well, I'm not going to say words of wisdom, but what I am going to say is, you know, that's why it's critical to have conversations. So if if there is a person, a director on your board that is going to leave and they've had different engagements, number one, you need to have these conversations because everybody has different commitments. And you know what, people can only do so much. So if a person is being challenged and they must leave under whatever circumstances, could be a whole bunch of things, I think those type of conversations need to happen. That's one. Number two, what is alarming is, you know, we try to, and Perry and I, when we had the staff, the direct staff, we tried to have a consistent message. And I would always say if the directors are not supposed to be communicating with, we'll say, the staff, well, then that should be the policy. And it should all be funneled through one person. And I think, you know, when Perry and I had a team of people at the SAC office, we tried to do our best to have the consistency to make sure there wasn't any mistakes in interpretations or communication because, you know, sometimes you have a different approach over the phone than when you're in person, et cetera, et cetera. So that's my two cents on that one.
Well, thank you, Andy. Now, could I pass that question on to you, Francois?
Well, absolutely. And, you know, when we look back at us and, like, with Perry, you know, came in and look at some radical changes we had to make, and we had three staff, and we made a decision and to have maybe change things. And I remember we had a couple presentations from management companies that came to the board and kind of explained to us what they could do for us. And when you are in that situation, you could have great staff working for you, but if you have an ED that's leaving and that's basically who's running your association right now, you might want to think to look to a management company. And the reason why I say that is that we all rely on experienced people and people that know what they're doing in their type of businesses. This is no different. You are going to be only better off by learning a lot of different things that management association and governance. It gives you a lot more time as a board to think and to see where you want to go, what you can do, and what your goals are, and how you can reach them. With having at the back end governance that's really well in place, and that you can kind of oversee what they're doing, and you're working as a team anyways, but they're professionals in what they do, and that helps us becoming a high-performance organization. To me, it was a fantastic move. I remember that day clearly, sitting in that boardroom, Hilton Hotel in Toronto, looking to presentation and going, wow, this is what we need. And at the end of the day, the good thing is that that's what happened, and I believe that's what's changing the face of our organization moving forward.
Thank you, Francois. Justin, do you have anything to add to that?
Yeah, just quickly. I think it sounds to me like your board is going through kind of that transition right now, or a period of flux where things are changing. And I think something that just has come up with our board, and we have yet to make a decision on it, but it's come up a number of times, and I think it's a good time for you guys to maybe talk about it, is the possibility of terms for directors, whether you decide to implement them or not. I think now's a good time to figure that out and make a decision, because, I mean, there's benefits and drawbacks to that. The benefits are that you keep fresh ideas and fresh people on your board if you do decide to implement terms. And the drawback clearly is that, you know, you only have the really good people that you have on the board, you only have them for a defined period of time. But it's something that's hard to introduce at any given time in a mature board, but whereas you guys are going through that change right now, I think it's something that if I were in that period, it would probably be something I'd like to identify at that time.
Good point, Justin. I would also add to that that I would definitely suggest that if you don't have a board orientation and training program that you do every year, I would definitely suggest that you implement that ASAP. And if you do, or in either event, to make sure that the board directors are very clear on the difference between operations and governance, and that they are operating entirely in the governance corral and not in the operations corral. And that's really just a matter of training and understanding. Anne, do we have any more questions for our panelists?
We do. We actually have quite a few questions. So I'm going to try to go through them as quickly as I can. Just a quick note from the listener about the question that we just asked. They were mentioning that he was asked on the board because of his governance experience, and he plans to have board orientation to go over the bylaws and organization structure as a whole so as not to center out the couple originating members.
Great idea. So what's our next question?
Our next question is actually, funnily enough, about terms. The next question is the president elected from within the board? And how long is the term?
So this is a question about how it should be done. Should the president be elected by the board, and how long should her term or his term be?
I can try to unmute Terry if you want some clarification. Terry was just wondering if the president is elected from within the board, and how long is the term?
Okay. Well, I can answer that question really quickly, and really it's entirely dependent on your bylaws. Your bylaws will dictate how that works. Typically, usually, the way it's provided for is that the president is elected by the board itself, not by the members. The president is elected as a director, and then the board itself decides who the officers are going to be, so president, vice president, etc. And in terms of the term of the president, that is typically dictated by the bylaws. Usually the bylaws will say that this is how long each officer can remain. Sometimes it's for a specific term, usually 1 to 2 years. Sometimes it's 1 to 2 years with the opportunity to go for a further 1 to 2 years, but usually the term for the president is limited, even if the term for the directors is not. What is our next question, Anne?
Our next question is, the conversation opened with the title Evolution from Operations to Strategy. Would each of you comment on what you believe strategy to mean? Is it a process, or is it about positioning the association for competitive advantage?
So the question is strategy a process, or is it about positioning the association for competitive advantage? Or, I guess, any of the panelists, maybe you think it's something completely different. So I'd like to open that up in general to the panelists and ask any one of you who's got a thought on that to respond, please.
I guess
all at once, guys.
It went silent. Listen, we apologize. So, Aaron, basically, from strategy to, if you just repeat that quickly, please, from strategy
to. The listener said, "What do you think strategy is?" And the listener said, "Do you think it is a process, or do you think it is positioning the organization for competitive advantage?" So I would invite you to say, well, yeah, I think it's one, that one or the other one, or maybe you think it's something completely different. What do you think strategy is?
Well, I think strategy is developed for me within having a goal in mind. So, you know, you wanted to achieve, your association, you want to reach a certain goal, a certain level. And from that, you build your strategy around that, and that becomes a process. So it's all linked together for me. But the main thing that you need first is to know where you want it to be, where you want to be as an organization, as a, you know, what are your goals And then from that, you build a strategy. From that strategy, then you can implement. So to me, it's all linked together.
That's a really good point, Francois. When Francois is talking about the goal, this is where the vision statement comes in. It plays a critical role because your strategy is how we're going to get somewhere. And in order to get somewhere, you need to know where you're going, as Francois just said. And typically, that's contained in your vision statement. So a vision statement isn't just a warm and fuzzy nice to have. It's actually a critical element of strategic planning. Would any of the other panelists like to comment on strategy?
I'd like to say something on the competition. You know, every organization is always under a competition, so you can throw in that into your strategy, but what you need to do is build some core foundation for your own organization to leapfrog or pass forward. So, I mean, as a nonprofit, you really don't want to say you're out there competing with other things, but you are competing. So you have to think in the back of your mind is why do people want to join your organization? And that's the ongoing discussion that an organization has to have, and it's a healthy discussion, because if you stay there, you're going to be like some of these other big companies, but you're not a company, that are no longer with us. They just stayed there. They felt that they're going to have their base of customers, and that's it. And I think it's really important to look at that. And in your, you could call it your strategy, to continuously find new solutions and better ways to do things that you can attract not only new members, but different members to your organization.
That's a really good point, Andy. Does anybody else have anything to add to that question about strategy?
I think strategy is, as was kind of mentioned before, it has all to do with what is the goal of the association. So what is the question that this association is going to answer? Or what is the problem that this association is going to solve? And is there another association out there that is already solving this problem? And if there is, then why are we? Then what's the point of this association? And as for competition, we don't compete against a similar association. In today's world, there are so many associations out there. We compete against all of them, even the ones that have nothing to do with what we do. So in the sign business, we compete against the Chamber of Commerce and the local Chamber of Commerce that people belong to. So when people are writing their checks at the beginning of the year and they have to decide how much money they got to budget towards different associations, even though they're different, we're still competing against them all. So it's just really vital that you really focus and know exactly what you're doing. And from there, you can strategize and decide how to meet that need.
Thanks very much, Perry. Anne, do we have another question?
We do. The next question is, what are the three most strategic governance functions?
The three most strategic governance functions. Well, let me take a crack at that to start. I would say, first of all, it's understanding the difference between governance and operations, and making sure that the board is focusing on governance and not on operations. That's a critical consideration. I think from a governance perspective, there are also four things to keep in mind. First of all, when you walk into a board meeting, you need to be well informed. That means you need to have done your research, you need to have read the board briefing package, and you're there to participate. You're not there to have somebody read the briefing package to you. Once you know what you know, you are there to listen. So hear what other people have to say. Question. Listen and question are number two. You need to ask your questions. You need to debate. Even if everybody in the boardroom thinks the answer is yes, it's really critical that somebody takes the position of devil's advocate and says, well, what if no were true? And especially when you've got everybody on the board that's all from the same industry or profession, you can often find that groupthink is an issue here. And so debate has to happen regardless, so the board can hear both sides of the equation. And then once the decision is made, the fourth element is support. Once the decision is made, whether you are on the yes or the no side, no matter what the board decided, you need to make sure that you support that decision. Panelists, do you have any comments to make on the key elements of strategy and governance?
Well, governance is basically a process that, or a method of self-evaluation, as far as I'm concerned. So there's different distinctions between operations and governance, and you have to make sure that you don't fall in the trap of being too much involved in the governance of things, and you know, there is definitely process to put in place for that not to happen, and that's a big part. I think that's the basis of making some changes and moving forward. You know, you need to have well-established processes that don't allow you to be going off track. I'll give you an example. You know, the board makes a decision, and then 2 weeks later, they reopen that decision and try to go towards another decision. The board has left policies, and if they do, they don't follow them. So these are symptoms of bad governance, but at the same time, you know, once it's well put in place, I think that it's basically the basis of moving forward, and that's my two cents on that one. Thank you.
Thank you, Francois. You raised a really important issue. The board needs policies in order to function. And whether that's a small number of policies or a large number of policies, there really are some bare minimum policies that the board needs to operate. And if you are going to have a board that really is practicing something resembling good governance, policies are a huge support for that. So thanks for that, Francois. And just in the interest of time, do we have another question we should be moving on to?
We do. We actually have two questions. The first question is, what would you suggest for ongoing governance training for a board that is spread across Canada?
That's a really good point. Let me take a crack at that. With the Sign Association, there are a couple of methods that get used. One method is to do in-person training at a single board meeting. And in different years, sometimes there's time to do that, sometimes there's not. There is also one-on-one webinar-based board orientation that gets done with new directors in years where we haven't had time to do a full board orientation session for everybody. So my experience has been in person, where you've got a facilitator who comes in and does the training live. But that involves flying everybody to a central location, and you know your board may not have the resources to do that. The next best thing, in my opinion, is using webinar software. And obviously, whatever board training you're doing, it has to be backed up with an orientation manual that board members can refer to on an ongoing basis. Those are my thoughts on it. Panelists, do you have any other thoughts about boards that you've sat on where there's been another approach toward training people nationally?
I think that I haven't seen much of a difference, and I think that you're always trying to do your best in training your people. I also think that, in my case, it was very beneficial. I've, you know, over the last 2.5 years, I've been to several CSAE meetings and discussion on high-performance organizations, and it's really helped me, you know, have a clear vision on where we were and where we needed to go. And so that's also another part of training. But as far as the board is concerned, you know, we have orientation packages that we send out with a new director that comes in place. You know, they come to the first board meeting, we have dinner, we exchange, we, you know, try to help each other out in that sense, as far as that's concerned, whether it's a region or a chapter from your organization. On a national level, that's also done to the best of our capabilities. But training is not only, I think, on the board level, it's also, you know, like when I said earlier, if you're passionate and you wanted to bring this organization to a new level, you also need some, you need to train yourself and to understand yourself where and how this could happen. So that's a little note that I wanted to add, where it's helped me have a different vision. And so I wanted to share that with everyone.
You know, Francois brings up a really good point for our listener. Not every director has a passionate desire to be a better director, but all good ones do have a desire to get at least somewhat better. And it can be, let's face it, directors don't get paid. So what can we do to help them to get value out of the experience so it's not completely one way? And one way of doing that is to do exactly what Francois talked about, give them the opportunity for ongoing professional development in the work of being a director. And CSAE, the Canadian Society of Association Executives, and the Trillium chapter here do a really good job of providing courses that enable directors to better understand how associations work, how governance works, etc. So that extra training can be a real perk for your directors. And let's move on to the last question, please.
Last question is, there were some not-so-subtle references to cultural aspects around regionalism. How did the conversations around culture actually go?
Wow, okay, I'm going to open that up. Perry and Francois, please.
Yeah, we're from both sides of the spectrum here. But, you know, at the end of the day, my feeling, and, you know, I'm a French-speaking person from Quebec, and lucky enough to learn how to speak English at an early age, and, you know, I'll be able to be where I am today, both in my business world and in this association. And at the end of the day, I really don't, you know, yes, there is some tough question. You have to understand both sides of the story. And again, we said earlier about listening and understanding, and people may have an opinion or different, you know, you need to know that. You need to ask those questions, and you need to be able to have the space to raise those. You know, you never speak to us in French. You know, everything we get is in English. So that's one view from, you know, let's say the eastern part of Canada, Quebec specifically, in an English environment. You know, it's like globalization. You know, you want to have everybody together. I said that earlier. So you have to give them services for that to happen, but also you need to listen to their needs and what do they want to be able to be more involved, and then you get them more involved in your association and make them feel part of it. And, you know, that was one thing. Talk to us in our own language. So that's helped us for sure, and with Quebec. So I know if Perry, you want to add something for Alberta?
Sure. Could you just repeat the question? I just want to make sure I get the right element to what you're saying. What was the question again? Just so
I can repeat the question.
That right.
Certainly. Yes, definitely. There were some not-so-subtle references to cultural aspects around regionalism. How did the conversations around culture actually go?
Okay, yeah. So that's a very strong point. And often we dismiss cultural, we dismiss the cultural aspect to associations that you know, when they span different things, and that's the key to eliminating these things is to not gloss over them, but to acknowledge them and bring them to the forefront and let people acknowledge it. So Francois brings up a good point. If we're a truly Canadian national association, then why aren't we producing materials in English and French? And yet, from a financial point of view, it's very expensive to translate English materials to French or vice versa. So how do you find that balance? Well, you just bring up the conversation. You start talking about it, and then pretty soon, and what happened with us is we negotiate what things are important to have translated, and there's also lots of stuff that isn't that important to get translated, but at least it's been acknowledged and it's been accepted. So that's the whole thing with culture is you got to be able to take the time it needs to discuss these and have everyone have their say with it.
I think it's Justin, guys. I think something that when you sit on any of these boards, especially in an organization like ours or any national organization, you really have to come to the table with an element of impartiality. And by that, I mean not only from your company standpoint, where you no longer wear the hat that you wear at the company that you work for or own, but you do the same with your region. I mean, if you truly are going to be a national organization, you can no longer come to the table with a vested interest in, you know, just from my example, like receiving financial resources for the Atlantic Provinces chapter. Well, now I have to think of things more on a national point of view, and I think that anybody that sits on a national board of directors, and to be honest, your organization may be cut up differently than ours. Ours is cut up geographically by province. Some of them may be done by, you know, size of company or class of membership or whatever it is. But I really think it's important to enter into these things as an impartial party at the table. And when you sit around the table as a board of directors, you want to move that in one direction, and that one direction should be in the best interest of your membership base, not in any given segment thereof. So, you know, we don't want to channel all of our resources to Ontario or Atlantic or Saskatchewan or anywhere. We want to make sure that we're acting on behalf of the best interest of any member across the country. So I think, like I said, the element of impartiality that you need to bring to the table is very important. and leaving some of the regional. It's not to say that you're going to forget where you came from or forget, you know, where your home is, but you kind of have to put that in the back seat and think in broader terms.
Justin, you brought up a really good point, and I'd like to emphasize that to our listener. At the end of the day, one of the most important elements of governance is exactly what Justin said. Once you're sitting on that board, you are there to represent and act on behalf of all of the members, not the place you're from or the company you're from. And some people, they take that very seriously and come to it very easily. Others have a really hard time getting that sort of, I represent my company or I represent my geographical region. They have a very hard time taking that hat off their head. So thank you, Justin, for sharing that. And I believe that concludes our questions.
That is correct. We don't have any questions.
Okay, well, I want to thank our panelists, Perry Brooks, Andy Grugru, Francois Lussier, and Justin Boudreau. Thank you all for sharing your experience and your wisdom with us. I've really enjoyed talking to you, and you've brought a lot of great stuff forward for our listeners. I want to also thank our listeners, and I want to point out to you, in terms of upcoming events, please do keep in mind our 2017 webinar and workshop lineup. We'll be announcing that later this month. And we will also be publishing the results from the 2016 benchmark survey. And that will be published by Zeem and Bram Research also later this month. Thank you all, and we look forward to talking to you in the new year.
Thank you very much, Robin.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.